Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Craig, it is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic, and I'm here today with somebody who I have personally met and spent the last week with. And after spending the week with this person, I desperately wanted them to be a guest on Talk Magic because I have never been so blown away and fooled in my entire life. Now, this is somebody who you've probably never heard of, but I guarantee you're going to be hearing this name an awful lot. He is a key part of the Penguin Magic, of P3, and an incredibly nice guy, and a creator of magic, a performer. He's done it all, and he's very young as well, so it's really irritating. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Nick Popa. How are you doing, Nick? You all right?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Man, I'm so glad that you can find the time to come on this, because genuinely, I spent the week with you and Eric Tate and Nick LaCoppa in Penguin, and I spent a lot of time with you, and I was just, one of the highlights of my trip was hanging out with you, because you are just so awesome. I mean, the stuff you were showing me is brilliant, and you've got such a great story, because you're kind of working your dream job at the moment. I mean, you're doing stuff that like almost every magician in the world would want to be a part of, and you're doing it, and that's why I wanted to get you on the channel, because honestly, your story is so inspirational for anybody who's new into magic, or anybody who's been in magic for a while and has goals and aspirations. Man, you're smashing them out the park and then some. So let's, I said at the beginning of the interview, probably a lot of people haven't heard of you. That is going to change, but it really will. But let's start at the very beginning. So obviously, I've just said you work with Penguin, you work at the Magic Theatre, but let's start at the very beginning. When did you get, how old are you at the moment, Nick? You're like 20?
I'm 22.
22. So you're 22. When did you get into magic? What's your origin story?
So it's pretty similar to a lot of others, but when I was 10 years old, I saw commercials for the Criss Angel magic kit, and I was blown away. Specifically, the trick that I wanted to learn the most was how to make a napkin levitate between your hands. That was kind of like the highlight of the magic kit, the secret levitator device. And I had all these different ideas in my head. I had like secret fans and or magnets, all sorts of things. I was a little bit let down, but I actually got the magic kit for Christmas that year when I had turned 10. And that was pretty much when I got bit by the magic bug, so to speak. Ever since then, I loved it. I'd say before then, I kind of had just like a fond interest to magic and pranks and stuff. I'd get joke books from the library. My siblings had magic kits, so I would play with their tricks and stuff, but I was never really into it until about 10 years old. And I started, I'd bring the tricks from the kit to school, show all my friends, and they were all blown away. And it was just this weird feeling, because I was never really the class clown. I never stood out too much. I just kind of stood in the shadows for the most part. And things started to change around then. People started to notice me, people recognized me. And it was pretty cool. So that was pretty much how it started. And then about a couple years later, I found out about conventions and that there's a whole community outside of just Criss Angel and the few other magicians I found on YouTube. So I started going to Magi Fest here in Columbus, Ohio. And that was where I met some of the first magicians. And I started to talk to some people like online. That's how I heard about Magi Fest through like some video chat forums that I'd go on when I was younger. And then from there, I started creating my own magic. And I found out about Penguin. I met Sean at Sean Dunn at Magi Fest, and he told me about P3 Magic. And so he told me that they have lectures here every week, and they're free if you come to the studio to watch them live. So I'd beg my dad. I lived in Canton, Ohio, which is about 2.5 hours north of Columbus, so it was a drive. I begged my dad every week. It wasn't every week that we came, but I would beg him every week that there was a good name magician. Like, Dad, please take me to Penguin. Please take me to Penguin. And so, yeah, if you may not have known my name, but if you're a Penguin Magic or Penguin Live subscriber, you've probably seen my face and you've watched me grow up. And it's pretty surreal that now, as Craig said, I'm working here. I'm living my dream job. It's amazing. It's the life.
I'm going to break some of that down because that's
incredible. Yeah, I kind of just did a little summary.
You did a synopsis, which is great, but I'm going to break that down. Like, so first of all, I speak to a lot of people that get into magic as a kid and then kind of lose their way and they go, oh yeah, I found girls or whatever. And then I came back into it at the age of 18. You've been pretty much hardcore into magic right from the second that you got that Criss Angel box set, right?
Yeah.
And you said that you went to MagiFest a couple of years after getting into magic. So that would have been 12. And,
yes.
And then you started creating your own magic.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I created my first, I was creating original independent creations. You know, I had some independent creations a little bit before, but I had my first original creation when I was 12 years old. And I released it when I was 13 on the Penguin Magic Partner Program.
Okay.
So brilliant. That was actually, yeah, so that was where I got my start in releasing magic. I released, I think, 5 or 6 separate products throughout my teens on the Penguin Partner Program.
That's awesome. So would you say, like, as somebody who's getting into magic, the Penguin Partner Program is a good thing to get involved? Just so that people understand the difference, because a lot of people watching this might not know the difference. Mm-hmm. There's two parts to Penguin, aren't there, when it comes to releasing magic? You've got what I did when I went there, which is I'm working directly with Penguin or P3. Mm-hmm. But then you've got the partner program, which is once you're accepted onto that, it's not produced by Penguin. You produce it yourself, but they will market it for you and they will push it out for you to their audience. Is that, am I getting that
wrong? Yeah, no, you're right on. So it's P3 is our production studio right here. This is, if you want something that's going to be top-notch quality, you get all the Penguin marketing, all the branding, all that stuff, then you want to go through P3. But if you are capable of filming your own product, editing, doing all the behind the scenes work yourself, by all means go through the partner program, because you get a little bit more money because you're doing more of the work. Mm-hmm. And it's just as easy for you to get your creations out there. We have a great team who approves submissions all the time, and as long as you do your research, as long as you have a good original idea, it all you got to do is film yourself teaching it, throw it up on the website, and you can start sharing your ideas as well.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And there's people like yourself and Nick Del Fonte and Dr. Cyril Thomas, they've all come through the partner program, haven't they? I mean,
yeah, there's been quite a few magicians who've kind of had their beginnings through the partner program.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that gets you on the radar of Penguin, which is
absolutely.
So what was your goal? So your release, you found out about Penguin through MagiFest, and you started creating your own magic. And you're putting stuff out through the partner program. What was your goal as a kid? Was it I love magic so much, I want to do a job in this industry? Was it to be a professional performer? Was it ultimately wanting to work for Penguin? When you were kind of releasing this magic and you were like 13, 14, 15 in your teens, what was your goal when you finished school?
Well, ultimately, I had a bunch of different aspirations, but ultimately I wanted to just be the next big thing in magic. That's been my goal since I started. I want to be the next David Copperfield, Chris Angel. And I know that sounds big. I know it sounds kind of like bold, but you got to dream big to get there. So I think there's nothing wrong with that, especially if you're humble about it. And so I always wanted to kind of, like I said, be that next big thing. But also on top of that, I want to be the one that inspires a new generation of magic. You know, like there's a whole generation like myself who was inspired by names like Chris Angel, David Copperfield, Lance Burton, all these big people, David Blaine. I want to be one of those guys in magic that is able to start a whole new generation. You know, start a whole new generation of thinkers, creators, performers. I love being able to enhance the community, share my knowledge with them. And it's not necessarily about the money. I know a lot of people will say that, but truthfully for me, I do this simply because I love magic. I love the art and I love sharing my ideas with other people. Seeing others performing my magic is one of the most just heartwarming things to me.
That's amazing. That is fantastic. So you get to a point where you finish school, and do you obviously, I'm guessing you're performing, you're gigging as well during school. I mean, you're going out doing gigs wherever that may be. Mm-hmm. You started performing when you finished school. What I'm trying to find out is how you went from finishing school to working at Penguin, because you've been there for a couple of years now. So you've been there since like 20 years old. How did you get onto it? Because I mean, let's be honest, it's not an easy gig to get. You know, I mean, you work every day with people like Eric Tate and Nick LaCobb. You know, we're talking about the who's who here, right? So how did you get the gig? I mean, how did that all come about?
So I definitely got lucky in terms of like timing and stuff. But I didn't finish college. I did 1 year, and I was originally going to go for software engineering. I wanted to learn how to code apps, but I wasn't feeling the full 4 year degree, and so I changed programs, and I moved down to Columbus. And since I had been going to lectures growing up, I had that connection with Penguin already, so that helped out a lot. And they had just recently had a few people move on to do other things. So they were looking for a new cameraman, and they were also looking to start expanding their manufacturing department. And I was good at both building magic tricks, building magic gimmicks, and doing video production. I've been doing camera work, not necessarily big scale productions, but you know, I've been playing with cameras, doing editing, personal stuff since just about as long as I've been doing magic. It's another one of my passions. You know, I've loved doing social media videos. I'll talk about this a little bit later, but I did back in 2016, a 365 or 366 Instagram project. So that was a lot of fun.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I'll talk about that a little bit. So I've always had a love for cameras. I've always had a love for magic. So when I came down here, I knew they were kind of looking for a new cameraman and stuff. So at one of the shows that I came to, I approached Mandy Hartley, who's the COO here at Penguin. And she kind of runs the whole operation here in Columbus. And I introduced myself and basically said, hey, I'm in the area. If there's any way I can help, I would be more than happy to. And it was essentially that, and she really liked me, and she gave me her email. We connected. She interviewed me, and and basically hired me on the spot. So it was really cool. I got to train alongside Eric. He kind of took me under his wing and really showed me the whole rundown with filming here. And before long, I found myself becoming basically the lead camera operator here at Penguin. So I do all the primary B-roll for a lot of our products. I've helped film every product and lecture over the past 2 years, pretty much. I'd say 90%, because some of those were filmed a little bit before my time. They just got pushed back in the queue. But about 90% of the products that have been released over the past 2 years, I've had a hand in both producing the video, some editing, and also building some of the props, some of the gimmicks that come with it. So it's really cool to have my foot in kind of every little pool, you know?
Well, from my experience when I was there, obviously you were getting a lot of B-roll for my stuff, and I was just blown away by, like, you just looked at something and was like, right, okay, I'm going to do this. And then you showed me the footage back and I was like, oh my God, that's amazing.
Like, thank you.
Amazing. And for somebody who, let's say there is somebody out there that's wanting to go into the partner program, obviously they need to produce the trailer themselves. As somebody who has produced so many magic products, if there is somebody planning on doing the partner program, any advice on how to actually frame that trailer to get people to want to buy it?
You know, one of the biggest things when I'm doing B-roll is I look for the really visual, the most important parts, the effects, and I try to highlight those as best as I can. Get every different angle. I try to get close-ups, faraway shots, just anything that's gonna highlight those properties, that the selling properties of a trick. You know, if it's a trick that can be shuffled, with a borrowed shuffled deck, I might get some really good shots of magician cleanly shuffling those cards so that they know it truly can be shuffled. It's not false shuffles or anything like that. And also, you know, just being very open, being fun, energetic, those kinds of things, that gets people engaged. They want to see what you have. So if you're just kind of sitting there saying, "Hi guys, here's my trick. It uses a phone, blah blah blah," it's not as engaging. You know, you want to have some cool music. You know, and it's not hard. It's a lot of it is just knowing when to cut to different clips, and a lot of that is kind of listening to the music that you have and picking those, like, where the beat drops. Those would be good places to kind of cut to different cool clips, and a lot of it too is playing around in I use Final Cut Pro, but I started off in iMovie, which is something free that if you have an iPhone or iPad or even a laptop, a MacBook Pro or something, iMovie's free. So you can start editing real easy, and just kind of play around with some of, like, the cool transitions, stuff like that. It's all just getting creative. If you think it's cool, add it, you know?
Yeah, that's really good advice. That's great advice.
And Thank you.
You say that for the last 2 years, you've been working on different projects and pretty much all the Penguin Lives and everything. What's is there a particular project or a couple of projects that stand out that you really enjoyed working on?
Definitely one of my favorite projects, hands down, was Snaps. I distinctly remember when it came to filming the B-roll for the Snaps trailer, we were in Vegas. We were filming with Chris Angel at the time, and I'm in the hotel room with Nick LaCapo. He goes, "Oh, hey, we need some B-roll for Snaps. Here, take these." And he hands me the two Snaps decks and a camera. He's like, "Just walk around the hotel, try to get some cool shots." And I've been here for a good few months now, but I'm still kind of like, I'm still new-ish, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I'll see what I can do. And it was so much fun just walking around in this new environment. I had basically free range of Planet Hollywood to walk around. So, you know, I was walking through the mall, just finding cool like water fountains, trying to match the images on the deck with cool scenery in the casino and in the hotel and stuff, just cool carpeting, cool mirrors. And it was just a blast walking around filming that. You know, what's another fun one was The Raven. That one was actually my first project that I filmed without anyone necessarily like watching over me, guiding me. I was kind of like the sole cameraman in that operation. It was just me and Nick in the studio for all of that, and filming the B-roll and the trailer for the Raven demo was so much fun. You know, we had this blackout theater, and we just did all these real cool cinematic shots, and we were showing off things that nobody knew was possible with the Raven. Even I didn't realize it was possible. You know, I always thought Raven was just this like, woo, make things vanish. And we were doing just the craziest things. Nick has taken the Raven to a whole new level. Yeah. And the best part is it's the exact same prop from back when it was released years ago. Nothing's changed. It's all just the different handlings that Nick figured out, and it's taken it to a whole new level. So I'd say Snaps and The Raven are definitely my two favorites that I've worked on.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. I mean, so cool. And outside of that, obviously, I don't know how much I'm allowed to say, so I'm going to leave it to you because I don't want to
speak
about anything. But while I was there, you've carried on creating. And you've carried on creating magic, and you're very close to releasing a couple of things of your own this year.
Mm-hmm.
Both of which blew me away. Genuinely blew me away. There's one particular thing that I think will be as big as Double Cross.
I appreciate that.
Double Cross. It's like everybody who's got a Sharpie marker is going to want this. And then there's another thing that I don't want to do it a disservice by saying it's a rising card with an impromptu with a shuffle deck, because mm-hmm. it's more of a utility item that you can pretty much do anything with. And when you showed it me, I was just there for like an hour just playing with it. It's so fun to play with.
I remember, yeah. That was awesome. I
mean, God, it's amazing. So what can you tell us about this? When is it coming out? And what's the time frame on these things? Because purely from a selfish point of view, I want both of them in my life.
Well, that means honestly the world to me. I don't have exact dates for either of them, but the first one that you were talking about, the Sharpie effect, actually both of these, I have posted videos on my Instagram of the performances. So there's a trick that is similar to Double Cross. I actually use this as an introductory effect to Double Cross, but I will, I'll take a Sharpie out, I'll draw an X on my hand, and you can visually watch the X move across my palm, and then I can either make it jump visually from hand to hand and it'll reappear on like my finger somewhere, or I can take the X off and using Double Cross make the X jump onto a spectator's hand, and then of course they are left with the permanent ink on their hand. So that's an effect
live, and it is darn good live. It is amazing. Sometimes you see this stuff on Instagram, and when you see it live, you're like, but this was mm-hmm. just as good live as it was on video. It was amazing.
Thank you. And that, you know, that brings up a good point with my creative style. Is one of the most important things to me is it has to be both workable in the real world, as well as, you know, visual enough to be able to do on Instagram, on social media. So that being said, this effect hand drawn is perfect for both scenarios. And so that gimmick has been in production for the last year or so. And it's really close. We're on the final touches right now. It's been a little bit of an intricate one, but I'm really pleased with how it's come. And we're so close. I want to say, fingers crossed, It should be ready by this summer. So that one, yeah, that one is coming out real soon, hopefully. I don't have any hard release dates for either of them yet, but fingers crossed, if everything goes as planned, it should be here by summer. I'll give that as a rough estimate. And then the other one is the basic handling, which is what I came up with. I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but while you were here, I was scrolling through my old YouTube channel, and I happened to find a video of me performing this rising card from exactly 9 years from the day you left here. Wow. I happened to find it. I posted exactly 9 years ago on my YouTube. So this was one of my earlier creations that over time I've just kind of made slight modifications to the gimmick. It is kind of crazy though, the overall handling of the rising card has remained relatively the same since the conception of this idea, which is pretty neat. But the story behind that one is basically I had the idea for this rising card that was completely clean. You could do it with a borrowed deck, borrowed shuffled deck. Didn't have any invisible thread. No like weights or special gaff cards or anything like that. And you could do it, no clothing restrictions. It was basically, in my opinion, one of the cleanest rising cards that you could do.
I agree.
And for years, that's all it was. It just remained a rising card. And it wasn't until late last year, I was playing around with the gimmick just for fun. And I happened to bring it to the studio and I showed it around to a couple of the guys like Eric and Lacapo and Sean, and they all loved it. They thought it was great. And I had for years, me saying all these things, I still kind of thought it was a mediocre trick. I didn't really think much of it, just due to the simplicity of it. I didn't think that it was that great. But I showed it to a few people and they freaked out over it. They loved it. And immediately when I showed them what the gimmick was, they're like, that's really cool. But I feel like there's way more that you can do with this. And I look, I'm like, wow, I never thought about that. So I spent the next week kind of just developing different ideas with it. And soon enough, I had come up with about a dozen different ideas, all using the same gimmick. And you can do really cool color changes. You can steal a card from anywhere in the deck. You can have a card selected, signed, give the deck to a spectator, losing in the deck, give the deck to a spectator, have them shuffle the cards as much as they want, and then they hand the deck back to you, and you can instantly steal the card from anywhere in the deck without doing any fumbling, any like fidgety moves, get it into a palm seamlessly. You can control it to the top, to the bottom. There's countless routines. If you were playing around with a cool like magnetic cards routine with it.
I love the idea of just dribbling the cards down and reaching in.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, there is the card catch. That was awesome. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, because yeah, I mean from my point of view, that's the dream effect. You borrow a deck, have someone pick a card, they lose it in the pack, they shuffle it in the pack. You don't change the position of any card. You just dribble and your hand goes in and you pull it out.
Yeah, it is incredible. And it, you know, again, I didn't really realize its full potential. Part of it is just because of how simple the method is. I thought it was too simple, and I didn't think anyone would do it. But I started to show it around recently, and like I said, the guys here loved it. I brought it to Magi Fest this year and showed it to a handful of people, and every person I showed it to was fooled, and the reactions were almost identical. They were fooled. They'd ask me how I did it. I show them the gimmick. They'd say, "What's that?" I tell them what it was, and they say, "What the fuck?" Oh, sorry, I don't know if I can
Hey, this is okay. My channel. You can swear as much as you want to.
Okay, cool. So they're, but they're all like, you know, like, what the hell? What the fuck? Like, how did that's all it is? I'm like, yeah. And I show them everything that you could do with it, everything at least that I've come up with it. And they were all blown away with, again, how simple it is.
True that another company who will remain nameless did not realize that you worked with Penguin and offered you like a contract to release it.
It is very, very true that another company other than Penguin, I showed it to somebody unbeknownst to me. I didn't realize they were watching whatever, and then they came up to me afterward like, is there any chance you want to go film this as a download with us? I'm like, sorry, that might be a conflict of interest. I kind of work for your competitors here. So I politely declined because I would very much like to keep my job here. and of course, if I'm going to produce anything, I want to produce it with the best company in the world, Penguin Absolutely. Magic.
Absolutely. 100%. So, good stuff. Have you got any advice for people watching this on creativity? You've been creating magic since the age of 12, 13. Mm-hmm. You're smashing it out of the park. 2022, Nick, is going to be your year. They're going to see a lot of releases coming from you.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done a Penguin Live as well, haven't you? Have you done a Penguin? Yeah, you've done a Penguin Live.
So yeah.
The Penguin Live out online. I mean, there's mm-hmm. so, which is highly recommended. So do you have Thank any you. Advice on creativity and on how to... because a lot of magicians struggle with the creative process. They sit there and they're like, right, okay, I'm gonna create a trick. And mm-hmm. inspiration doesn't hit, and they just sit there looking at a pack of cards, getting more and more frustrated. As somebody who's creating lots of magic, what uh-huh. advice can you give somebody?
One of the biggest pieces of advice is never try to force anything. I've in the past couple years, in some ways felt like I was hitting a bit of a creative block, and the problem really was I just kept trying too hard to create. And when you try too hard, you get tired, you get kind of burn out, and it does become very difficult. So the biggest thing is, you know, give your creations time. If you're struggling on something, feel free to set it down. I mean, the rising card thing is, as I said, 9 years in the making, and it took me 9 years essentially to realize that it's way more useful than it was. So there's always time to wait and improve something. I never rush anything to market, because that's when you're gonna get you're gonna miss things, you're gonna forget things. A lot of times that's why 2.0s, 3.0s, 4.0s come out is sometimes things just got rushed to market and they didn't think about everything. Not all the time. Sometimes it's just they come up with actual improvements. But you know, I think the biggest thing is be thorough. I try to think about what this audience is gonna think from a magician's point of view, as well as a spectator's point of view. I try to answer all of the questions that they might be asking me before I get asked them, you know, so that when I do go up to someone, the only question I can get is, how did you do that? You know, I don't want someone to say, oh, but what about the card in your pocket? Oh, I think I saw you do something. You know, I just try to eliminate all of that. I try to think 12 steps ahead of everyone. And then, you know, another thing is never shut down an idea. Creativity, you need to build on ideas. Very rarely does an idea come first try right away. So when I have an idea for a trick, most of the time I come up with the concept for a trick that I want to do. And then I'll figure out whatever methods will work. You know, I try to come up with as many methods as possible. Some that are practical, some that are completely non-practical, stuff that would never work, that like are not necessarily like feasible, but I still try to come up with even any absurd method, because any method is a direction in the right step. The more methods you can come up with, the more in depth you'll be able to get into the idea, the concept. And you might even come up with methods for tricks you haven't come up with, or with concepts you haven't come up with, but that method may not have worked here, but it'll work there for a trick you're coming up with, you know, 10 years down the road. But, you know, always write your stuff down. Never discount a bad idea. There's no such thing as a bad idea. But I'm trying to think if there's anything else. You know, just this always be open to new things.
By the way, this is brilliant.
Thank you. And I'm no expert. I'm just, you know, just trying to give you what I've been doing over the past few years. And one thing that I like to do as well is just look around my room, look around the spaces that I'm in, and find the magic in objects, right? So I'd, you know, pick up AirPods, say, okay, what is this? What does this look like? What does this do? What are AirPods for? Something I'll kind of give you the rundown on how I came up with another project that'll be coming out. It's still early in production, but I posted something about this on my or a video of this on my Instagram as well. But I had the idea of wanting to modernize a pen through bill, right? And at the same time, I was thinking, what's something that people aren't really doing magic with? AirPods. So I was thinking of like ways to kind of modernize kind of do my own version of like object, like a penetrating objects. And I was at the same time thinking, no one's really doing AirPod magic. So I didn't want to do the obvious AirPod through bill, because everything's object through bill. That's too cliche for me. So I was like, what else could I put an AirPod through? And the instant idea was, okay, AirPods go in your ear. And some people complain AirPods don't fit well. Like they don't sit in their ear well. So I was like, oh, you know, AirPods are known for the stem. What if instead of AirPod through bill, it was AirPod through ear? So I developed a gimmick that was essentially you go to put the AirPod in your ear, but instead of putting it in your ear, you put it through like the lobe, or, you know, I usually put it through the cartilage because I have my lobes pierced. So I don't want them to think it's just going through my piercing. But you can do a really cool AirPod through ear. So it's kind of modernizing the object through object plot to a new thing. And no one's really done like object through body part. You know, I mean, there might be something in like a magazine or in a book somewhere, but to my knowledge, I don't know of really any like object penetrating through a body part like that. So, and it makes sense. AirPods go in your ear, and it's kind of comedic that, oh, it's not sitting right. So
right.
That was kind of the how my creative process there. I tried to figure out what the magic properties were in some AirPods, and I thought, oh, object through bill, object through object.
That's so smart.
Thank you.
Swinging back on something that you said earlier on,
mm-hmm.
Tell us about the 366 challenge that you did, because you know what? I see it all the time on Facebook groups. I'm going to do mm-hmm. a 365 challenge. And day 20, they're just like, no, can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, that's a commitment, man. Like, I've been doing daily magic lives now for like 2 years, and I'm getting to a point where I'm just like, Penguin needs to bring out a lot more tricks a lot more quickly, because I'm running
out
of stuff here. Like, what was the reasoning behind that? And was it all your own material, or did you use other people's material?
No. Yeah, it was. So the goal behind it was simply to post a new magic video every day for the year of 2016. I was inspired by Eric LeClaire's 365 project that he did on YouTube. in a little cleric show. Everyone in Magic has probably seen at least an episode of that. If they've looked up Magic, you've probably seen something from the LeCleric show. And I really liked that. And no one was really doing anything like that on Instagram. So I thought, let's do the first Magic Instagram 365 project. I messaged Eric LeClaire asking for any advice, and his exact words were, "Don't do it." not to discourage me by any means, because Eric is a wonderful guy, super nice, but he meant that truthfully, because it was so much work for him when he did it, and he didn't want to see me fail, and so I appreciate it, but I didn't take his advice at all. I was like, I want to do it. I'm capable. I can achieve this. And after the first month, it was, I realized I was quickly running out of ideas. But I started going through books, trying to find old material that I lost. And not every video was good. But in the end, actually, this was also funny, because I started the announcements, and I did day one, and the first handful of comments were a bunch of my friends telling me I was an idiot because I decided to do a 365 project in leap year. So that was that is why it ended up being a 366 project. So fuck you, Eric. No. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work. And like I said, not all of the videos were top notch. I'm pretty sure like one of them was, I was in like a Chick-fil-A and I was on a school trip, so I had like nothing on me and I needed to post a video. So I made a chicken tender appear. Because why not? You know, like it wasn't the most grand illusions or the most creative ideas, but I successfully posted a different magic trick every year or every day for the year of 2016. And it was a lot of fun.
Of what, 16, 14, 16?
I was 16. Yeah. I was 16. I would have been 17 later on in the year. And it was wild. I remember the final day, I came up with a fun Sam the Bellhop kind of routine to close it all out. And I wrote this whole story, did a nice shuffle sequence, and did all that. That one, I think that was probably the hardest video of all of them, to basically write a whole script with a deck of cards based around it. But I completed the challenge. And I got no recognition from it, but that's okay. that's not what I did it for. I did it for the
fun. You did to get you where you are now, right?
Exactly. It was, you know, and there was recognition there. It was just a little joke because I didn't get, you know, super famous from it. But it definitely got people's attention. I got to reach out to a lot of different people who contributed things to it, helped me out along the way. So it was a great process. I learned a lot. It taught me a lot about social media, filming social media, which is one of the things that I do here now at Penguin, is a lot of the short form TikToks, reels that you see on our Penguin social media accounts have primarily been filmed again by myself. So that's a lot of like my style, some of it is just like my directing, my helping these guys kind of fit that short form kind of character. It's because it's interesting. It's a weird platform to perform for social media. You have to be weirdly like overly dramatic. It's like you're performing on stage, but twice as awkward, because it's just you and like maybe two or three other dudes in a room with an iPhone camera and you're just being overly dramatic. And so it's weird, but it's, you learn a lot and it's a lot of fun.
That's very cool. And one of the things that I've noticed about Penguin is their socials are popping right now. Like literally, I don't think there's another company that's doing as much content as you guys are.
No, we made the decision to focus very heavily on social media. I mean, Josh Birch is our social media manager, and he does a phenomenal job with engaging with our audience. He's always active on the stories, asking questions, getting people to engage with our socials. And it was last year we started to really notice the pickup in the short form, kind of 15 to 60 second vertical film style clips for like Reels, TikTok. And no one was really, I mean, there were magicians who were taking advantage of these platforms, but there weren't really any companies that were doing anything. So, so our team got together and we decided, you know, once a week, we're going to have jam sessions and where all the magicians meet up at the studio and just film a bunch of visual short form magic clips that we'll throw up, you know, to help not only promote magic to magicians, but also be engaging enough to a lay audience and get them to find out about Penguin, find out about the company, and eventually hope to inspire new magicians. And I think that's one of the things that we've done a really good good thing with and a good job at is not only catering to our current magician audience, but basically branching out, reaching more laymen. I mean, our audience has blown up in the past just few months of us posting these videos. And a lot of it is laymen and new followers who are just getting into magic. And we're getting loads of emails of people like, oh my gosh, I've never even knew that this was a site. Like this is so fun. I found you on Instagram, blah, 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 blah. So like it's done a lot for the community in general, and it's done, you know, even more for us as a company.
And a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the guys that work in Columbus, Ohio for Penguin, even if they're not necessarily, you know, they're all amazing magicians. Like I went to the gimmick building where they all make gimmicks, and it's just all of those guys have got so many skills. Like I walked in and they were like they were doing some incredible stuff. I mean, there's so many great magicians working in Columbus, Ohio for P3. Incredible.
Yeah, we have an amazingly talented staff here. I would say about 70-80% of our staff is magicians, and almost all of them are performers. You know, a lot of them create and have released their own magic. We're all really close. We're all really we love magic. We're all really passionate about it. And yeah, it is a really, really close-knit community here at Penguin. We have a lot of fun.
That's great. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you two more questions before we finish off. Now, the first question, Nick, we talked about products and we talked about products that you've been involved in, and you said Snaps was one of your favorite products. Mm-hmm. I can totally understand why. It's also one of my favorites. You've worked on so many Penguin Lives. For anyone who's watching, and I think the Penguin Lives are brilliant because there's so much value. I've been a subscriber for about the last 5 years, and so I see all of them. And you see stuff on there that you wouldn't see anywhere else. You've seen so many. First of all, you spent 2 years filming them, but then you spent 10 years going and visiting them or whatever.
Yeah.
But are there any, you know, for people that have never watched a Penguin Live before, are there a couple that might want to recommend that stand out as being really good?
So one that I always, whenever someone asks me this, the first one that I always recommend to people is Wayne Halchin.
Who's disappeared off the planet right now. I don't even know who he is.
He, you know, if you're a magician from my generation older, I feel like my generation is kind of the cutoff of like people who really, really knew who Wayne Houchin was. Because now he's still working and stuff, but he's very much more performing. He's not as active in the community anymore, which is a shame because he is brilliant. He's a wonderful thinker. But yeah, I've always been a big fan of Wayne Houchin. And I got the chance to see his lecture live here. So if you watch the Wayne Houchin lecture, young Nick Popa is in there. And there's material in that lecture that I still use in my show today. One in particular routine is his impossible drawing teleportation effect. So he's got a post-it note, a pad, and a marker. And he has three different people in the audience take the marker, close their eyes, and they just doodle on this post-it note. And he does that to three people, and he pulls it off, and he asks everyone to remember a distinctive feature of the abstract drawing. So maybe they can make out an image, or they see like a line that kind of went off the edge, something that they can remember later. And then he takes it, he folds it up, and he burns it. Puts in a glass, and he drops the ashes on the floor, rubs his foot in them, and he lifts his shoe up and shows that there's a folded post-it note on the bottom of his shoe. Pulls it off, and he shows it's the same bit of artwork. Wow. And I'm blown away, right? Everyone's blown away. But then he takes it, and he doesn't fold it. He just kind of like slightly creases it, so you can still even kind of see some of the artwork. And he openly burns it again. And you see this, like the first time he folded it up kind of makes it look like he might be doing a switch. This time, no. Burns it openly, puts it in the cup. And then he takes the ashes and goes, I think that he kind of like blew them. And I had been holding an envelope from before the lecture had started filming. And he gave it to me. And all right, he asked me to stand up, come on stage. I opened it up, and inside was another envelope. Opened that up, inside was another envelope. Inside of that were some ashes and a folded up post-it note. And when I opened it up, it was the same drawing as before. And it fooled me and everyone else in that room. And I'm telling you, I still use that routine today because it's that good. It looks exactly as I just described, and it is so clean. The method is amazingly simple, and it's so fooling. And that's just one thing from his lecture. Everything in that is so workable, so well thought out. It's stuff that you will want to add to your shows, add to your repertoire immediately. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I don't think I've seen that. I'm going to rush off and get the Wayne Houchin.
You need to go look at the Wayne Houchin lecture immediately. It is by far one of my favorite lectures. And I feel like not too many people like picked up on it. I don't know that it got the attention that it deserves. So that's why I'm one of those underground Wayne Houchin supporters. I'm there for you, Wayne.
Amazing. Can you give us one more recommendation?
Yes. Another great one is Gayton Bloom. Gayton Bloom has another really creative ideas. He's a real outside the box thinker. Another one that I attended. His routines are just fun, zany, and also very fooling. I really admire his thinking. It's unlike any other magician's material. Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything for that one. That one's really just a fun one. The idea and the ideas are also very workable as well. So yeah, definitely Wayne Hauchin, Gayton Bloom, two of my favorites.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So I'm going to wrap this up, but I've got one final question for you, which is, what's next, Nick? And what I mean by that is, you've openly said you've got aspirations of being the next David Blaine, and I really respect that. And I love people that have big goals, because I've always been the sort of person that says, if you're shooting for the moon and you don't hit it, you're still going to reach the stars, you know? So I love that thinking. I really do. So what's next for you? I mean, you're currently in a great place. You're in your dream job. You're getting to hang around some of the best magicians in the world on a daily basis. You're working with Eric Tate, for God's sake, and you know, Nick LaCopper. What's next? I mean, is Penguin, you know, you're releasing magic this year, and I'm sure you'll continue to do that. But I don't want to say a stepping stone, because that's giving it a disservice, but is Penguin one step in your career ladder? Are you looking to move on eventually and be that next TV magician? What's your goals over the coming week? What's on your magical bucket list that you want to hit?
So, you know, I definitely see myself remaining with Penguin for a while, at least for the foreseeable future. It's, like I said earlier, a really close-knit community here. I love working here. I wouldn't want to work anywhere else. That said, I do eventually want to get more into the performing. I used to perform a lot more over the last couple of years. I still perform here and there, but I've taken a bit of a step back and focused more on the production, behind the scenes sides of things. Really trying to hone in on my character as a performer. Figure out what sets me apart from other magicians, and figure out what I can bring to the table that makes people want to book Nick Popa as opposed to any other magician. So the next big step for me, I'd say, is moving more towards performing on stages more. I want to try to put some acts together to try to take around to the different magic venues like Keller's Magic Castle, maybe Chicago Magic Lounge, all the different kind of performing venues here in the States. That's I'd say what my next step is. And then, you know, from there, hopefully I want to have either a TV show or whatever the next form of visual entertainment may be. You know, I want to ride that. I want to kind of be one of the next kind of celebrity magicians, I guess. And, you know, maybe eventually have a Vegas show. I think it would be great, but ultimately I just want to keep sharing my ideas, keep spreading magic. And my big goal is just to hope to inspire a new generation of magic.
Perfect. That is such a great response. And you know what? You're very young, and you absolutely, knowing how ambitious you are and how driven and hardworking you are, I think if anybody could make those goals, it's going to be you. And
thank you.
And I've said, I've got a video, I've had a video, you haven't seen it yet, but there's a video going on my channel on Monday, and it's about what happened when I was at Penguin and that. And I said in that video, and I'll say the same thing to you right now, I'm a really big fan, Nick. I really am. I became a bigger fan having met you. And I think that the stuff that you're going to be bringing out over the next year or two, people need to watch out, because you're just straight through the roof.
That means so much to me. You know, coming from one of the most prolific magic reviewers out there. I mean, I know I grew up watching you on Wizard Product Review, and you know, I've been a big fan for my whole life, at least in magic. So it's a real honor to hear that from you, honestly. So thank you so much for this opportunity. It's been great.
Absolutely true. Now, where can people connect with you? We have mentioned Instagram quite a few times. I know you post quite quickly on Instagram. What's your Instagram handle? I'll put it at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, so my Instagram is at Nick Popa Magic. Pretty easy. You can also add me on Facebook. I try to get back as quickly as I can. Sometimes with the busy schedule, I might miss you, but you know, don't hesitate to reach out a couple of times. I don't find you annoying, I promise, because I can be that guy too. That will sometimes reach out a couple of times because I'm persistent sometimes. Yeah, you know? But yeah, always. You know, if you have questions, I'd love to help. If you have ideas you want to share with me, I'd love to see them. Maybe I can help you get them to the market, bring them here to Penguin. So I'm always open to new people reaching out. And occasionally, I might post some new videos on my YouTube, which is Nick Popa Magic. I'm not as frequent on YouTube, but I would like to get better, get back at it. So maybe check me out there as well.
Amazing. And if people want to check out your stuff, if they just type into the search bar on Penguin, Nick Popa, they're going to come up with your Penguin Live and the stuff that you've put out in the past through the partner program, right?
Yep. It'll take you, if you search Nick Popa, it'll take you to my creator page on the site. So you can get all my products there. My lecture, Cash Point, which is a fun bill change that my friend Tyler Reed and I created. And we put that out through Penguin. And then I've got a couple of my older partner program downloads still available. But they may not be there for much longer. So at least the current videos, I'm going to probably redo some of them with more modern, better produced explanations and whatnot. So while they're still there, you can get some of my older Penguin downloads as well.
Perfect. Nick, this has been an incredible interview. I want to say, seriously, thank you so much for finding the time. I know from having spent a week at P3 and almost dying through of how hard it was. I've never worked so hard in my life.
You're a trooper. You pushed through that.
And that was 1 week. I mean, you have to do this
every
day. Man, I don't know how you're even awake right now. But
Red Bull. Lots of Red Bull.
No. But seriously, thank you so much for finding the time. And I want everyone to go and buy your stuff because I'm a big fan. I'll remain a big fan. And I can't wait to see the next step of your journey, my friend.
Thank you so much, Craig. It's been a pleasure.
No problem. Guys, leave a comment down below because Nick will see it. If there's anybody who's going to see it, it's going to be the king of social media here. So make sure you leave a comment down below. Also, don't forget to check out Nick on Instagram and YouTube and go check him out on Penguin Magic. And I will be back again tomorrow at, three videos tomorrow, one at 9, one at 6, and one at 2. But I'll see you again. Nick, one more time. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be
magic.
Sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel,
Magic TV,
which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.